It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, my friends, we are halfway home on a Thursday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Great to be back with you guys after a day at the happiest place on earth, Disneyland, yesterday. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. And, it was good to get back to the office after. It's not a vacation day. That was just a day off at Disney. Definitely was not a vacation.
What's your favorite ride?
My favorite ride yesterday, Space Mountain, was unbelievable.
Space Mountain, it was the classic.
Well, they've changed it. It's now Hyperspace Mountain, and it's now a Star Wars ride, which I didn't realize until we got on it. And it was phenomenal, and Bo loved it, and Taylor loved it, really liked the roller coaster. I also like that train, the runaway train bit.
Thunder Mountain Railroad?
Thunder Mountain, yeah.
I do like
awesome.
That one.
It was awesome.
I don't like roller coasters. I do like that
Thunder Mountain Railroad was killer.
Yeah. It's very smooth now. It's not rickety.
You're right. The Rise of the Resistance is great, and Smuggler's Run is good. They're just very ornate. Like, it's just the ride, there's not a lot to it.
The detail is unbelievable.
Phenomenal. When we walked in a room and there's 100 stormtroopers, Taylor was like, he's never seen anything like it. He couldn't believe it. So it was pretty cool. They do a really good job there at Disney. I would like more. We did not go over to California Adventure. Kids are just a touch too little for the big roller coasters. But to be able to go and ride Space Mountain now makes me want to go back and take them. And they were really into it.
There's still plenty at California Adventure that they would.
That they could still ride.
That's where you get the Spider-Man guy flying
Marvel.
Around.
We knew Taylor loved Spider-Man so much.
Cars ride.
We knew Cars ride's great.
We knew if we went over there, there's no way we're getting out of there before 7 p.m. So yes. We were there at Rope Drop, which was 8. So we left San Diego. We were up, 5 o'clock in the morning. Left San Diego. Stopped, got Starbucks. Bo had to.
So you slept in?
Yeah, slept in. We had to go to find a hotel so Bo could drop a deuce. So that was fun. Before the before the parking opened, and then I had to poop. I'm like, hello, Spring Hill Suites. Oh, don't mind us. Yeah, we're staying here. Don't worry about it. You have a bathroom down here? So we had to do that. Get in, get your food, get your beignets, and it was great, man. We were there at 8 o'clock for the road trip. We think we left at like 2:00. So by the time we got to our car, it was 2:30. We're home by 3:30.
What was on the menu?
Menu yesterday was we started with beignets and I had some coffee.
Oh, New Orleans Square beignets,
brilliant,
very nice.
I had some mini corn dogs, and I had a root beer float. To end the day, very healthy lifestyle, very healthy indeed. But we walked 10 miles.
Wars Land, I haven't been there in a few years. Star Wars area, they had this like horchata cold brew drink that was unbelievable.
Yep.
And then you got to go to the Red Wagon and get the corn dogs.
You know what I'm interested in Disneyland next time? The Earl of Sandwich. You know where that is?
In downtown Disney.
It's when the tram pulls up, there's the Earl of Sandwich shop,
the monorail.
The tram from the parking lot.
Oh, okay.
So it's like outside of the gates.
Yeah, in downtown Disney.
Yeah, so the Earl of Sandwich looked good. But every time I go, when I get there, it's early, so I'm not going to get a sandwich then. And then when I leave, I'm already full. And I don't want to eat a sandwich right before I get in the car.
Makes sense. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'm very fascinated by the Earl of Sandwich. If anybody's ever eaten there, let me know how it went for you. But it was a great day.
Like sandwiches out there?
Yeah, you like sandwiches out there? Try the Earl of Sandwich at Disneyland. I bet it's very good. You can't call yourself the Earl of Sandwiches if you have a bad sandwich.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
So I've never eaten there, though, so I don't know.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
Molly says, the sandwiches are okay.
All right. Well, it's Disneyland. I mean, it's fine.
So I read something during the break that disturbed me a little bit. Jeff Passan, who we all tend to respect and like.
Very much.
Published a column this morning, early MLB takeaways, best and worst teams, umpires, and trends. Through a month of the season, we're starting May, so you're starting to get an idea of what's what in Major League Baseball. The sample size has gone from very small to at least somewhat reasonable on teams and players to make some judgments. And I went down to item number 7, and it's titled, Which Disappointment is Most Doomed? And Jeff wrote, of the first month's 7 biggest disappointments, the Arizona Diamondbacks, Houston Astros, San Diego Padres, San Francisco Giants, St. Louis Cardinals, Tampa Bay Rays, and Toronto Blue Jays, which is in the most trouble?
Huh.
And I first thought, of course, well, they didn't get off to a great start, but are they one of the biggest disappointments in all of baseball through the first month of the season?
The answer is no, in my opinion.
After shedding as much payroll as they did?
You made me sweat. I have to take my sweatshirt off now because you're mad.
So he said, he basically writes, I think the Diamondbacks are going to be okay. Then he writes, the Padres and Giants are repeating 2023 in the worst way.
What?
Nothing about them suggests they'll contend. Nothing about them suggests bad enough for the lottery. The Giants can't score runs. The Padres can't prevent them. That is basically the crux of the analysis from baseball's top reporter and insider, Jeff Passan. The Padres.
The teams again that are the disappointments.
The biggest disappointments. The Arizona Diamondbacks.
Diamondbacks.
I get that. Coming off a World Series trip.
Okay. Yeah. What'd they spend in the offseason?
And they spent some good money to add some players.
Okay.
Houston Astros, clearly, off to a disappointing start.
Yep.
The Padres.
Yep.
The Giants, who spent a ton of money, and are under 500.
Okay.
The Cardinals, who did not have a good season last year and are once again off to a shaky start this year, but I don't know that they're one of the biggest disappointments. The Rays and the Toronto Blue Jays, who I thought have been okay, and they looked all right when the Padres played them. I don't know if that's fair to lump the Padres in with the biggest disappointments of baseball.
He does go on to say that at least the Padres aren't the biggest disappointment. He does give that to Houston.
Out of those teams, who cut $92 million off the payroll?
Only one.
Only one of those teams.
New manager.
Cut $92 million off of their payroll. Only one. That it's they're not a great team by any stretch, but they're not if you went in expecting more than like 500-ish right now, I think that you were probably a little bit delusional.
Disappointing is a weird word because like what are they? Padres are 16-18.
Yeah.
What if they were 10-24?
That's disappointing because
it's disappointing, but it's also maybe somewhat expected after. All the reasons you just laid out.
You know which team is not in there that I would include? Because the word disappointment...
Wouldn't the Dodgers be disappointed?
Exactly. 100%.
The word disappointment necessarily starts with what your expectations were.
Yes.
If you expected to go 0-30, if you're 1-29, hey, that great. we're kind of pleasantly surprised with how our team is doing. I think the Dodgers have been a bigger disappointment to this stage of the season, even though they're alone in first place and, 4.5 games clear of the rest of the division, I think they've been a bigger disappointment than the Padres at this point in the season.
I mean, just the three of us, when we made our dumbass predictions for the season, we were like all, maybe a fourth place team.
My dumbass put the Padres
could be a
in
third
second.
Place team.
They are
but
in
look
second.
Who's right.
Yes. My point was that was a hot take from you.
Yeah, very.
When we made those predictions.
Very. It was pandering. 100%
I would say
pandering.
The expectations were not super high here in San Diego.
That's a tough one for me for
all right.
They are a weird look. Let's be fair to Jeff Passan too. Padres are a tough team to handicap. They just are. When you handicap a team as 81-81. I mean,
my guess is this is a really long piece, and he's probably been working on it for a couple of days.
That's what she said.
2 days ago looked a little different. Five losses in a row. The entire starting rotation struggled through a trip. Just having the last 2 days, Yu Darvish throw 5 shutout, and Joe Musgrove looking like Joe Musgrove going 6. All of a sudden, the comment that the Padres can't prevent runs doesn't hold water as well as it did 2 days ago. Now you're looking, all right, 2 good starts and going into Dylan Cease, who has been your best starter. Yeah, the Phillies got him.
Maybe he wrote this part on Sunday.
The Phillies are getting everybody right now. You can You can almost throw out the Phillies series a little bit. You can't, but you can a little bit. They've been doing that to everyone lately. They are you ran into a red-hot team. You didn't play your best. It was a bad weekend. Other Phillies series, the Padres have won 4 of their last 6 series, had the disappointing split against the Rockies. They've only lost one other series in their last 7, though, other than one bad weekend against the Philadelphia Phillies. Take that out. And the Padres, I would put in the pleasant surprise category for Major League Baseball through the first month of the season. Outside of one bad weekend, I put them as one of the actual positives of the first month of the season, not one of the biggest disappointments.
The fact that they're still and it's so early, but the fact that they're hanging around, they're hanging around, and that's kind of what we said is what needs to happen this year. 500 is okay. If we go into
they're a game and a half out of a playoff spot at the moment.
You guys sign up for 500 at the break?
Yes.
Yeah. All day. All day. All day I take 500 at the break, and then I'll let the second half speak for itself.
I'd even take 2-3 games under 500.
Right, but if you came
right around there.
You're hanging around.
Where a sweep puts you, back at 500 or better.
Yeah, that's a weird one for me. And
it's like there's biggest disappointments, there's biggest surprises, and then there's kind of right in the middle.
Look, okay, let's do biggest surprises. The Oakland A's are a massive surprise for me. Massive. I mean, I didn't expect those guys to win. I thought it would take them forever to get to the win total that they're at right now. The Chicago Cubs, not really a surprise. I mean, they're playing well now. There's a bunch of teams. The Miami Marlins, I'm not even surprised that they're
the whole A's.
The Royals and the Red Sox, he includes the Guardians, the Tigers, and the Brewers as his pleasant, positive surprise.
All the Central. All the Centrals.
Except for the White Sox.
Except for the White Sox. Yeah, that's a tough one for me.
Minnesota Twins have won 10 in a row, by the way.
Yeah, 10 in a row.
Again. I know there's no bad 10-game winning streaks.
There's not.
But White Sox and Angels. Against every other team, the Twins have been horrific, pretty bad this year.
No but. There's no buts about it.
It's 10-0 over your last 10.
It would be nice to get to play the White Sox 13 times this year. Let me just say that.
That's true.
Even better than getting to play the Rockies.
It's true.
Yeah, but with the Rockies, you still have to go to Coors Field.
You
got to
play in Coors Field.
You still have to go to Coors Field. With Chicago, they don't even have that. The Marlins have been pretty bad, too, although they just took a couple from the Rockies. So
it is interesting. That is an interesting take by Jeff Passan. 16-18, 4.5 out, 1.5 out of a wild card, 4-6 in their last 10. I don't feel I did feel disappointed when they lost 5 in a row. I was disappointed then because I felt like you rolled over in Colorado in that last game and you really let that one get away. And I felt like Monday night was horrible. I mean, you sandwiched. You took 8 innings to get another hit after the leadoff batter hit one.
And you barely showed up against the Phillies.
And you barely showed up at all against the Phillies at home. So I was disappointed in that. But they haven't disappointed me this season. I'm kind of falling that they're just fairly mediocre right now. They're a mediocre baseball team. So by that logic, 16-18 is mediocre. I think we're right on point. But they certainly haven't disappointed me.
16-18 to start last year would have been a disappointment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Last year, the expectations were...
I don't know what Padres actually started out last year.
Well, I know when we were 14-14, we were 14-14 this year on the same date. Which, by the way, is infinitely better than being 14-14 last year with the lineup and the payroll that you had.
I can actually tell you. Let's see. Let's go to 2023.
So
I think they were like 18-16 or something.
Yeah, something
similar, but a couple games above 500 at this point.
So I think he's a little bit off base there. But yeah, I know you guys probably talked about Brian Kenny yesterday. Everyone.
Oh yeah, do you want to sound off on that when we come back?
Not really. I actually respect his take because I tweeted like he's a generational hater like I am. Like he's just committed to his bit. That's all he's doing. Like he hates the Padres so much that I go, you know what, bud? I get you. I tip my hat to you. He's a moron. I mean, it's a moronic take.
I mean, Dan O'Dowd wasn't much better.
Right.
By saying only like 7 or 8 teams would be interested in Fernando, but it's better than 1-0 teams interested in acquiring Fernando.
Again,
Dan O'Dowd is just slapping him in the face with like facts, numbers, and he's just like, nah.
Right.
Nah.
We're going to take a quick timeout. All right. We don't need to talk about Brian Kenny, but let's have an honest conversation about Fernando Tatis post-suspension versus pre-suspension. And if you do notice, is there any difference?
Are you going to include because they did not include his surgeries. Surgeries.
Post-suspension/surgery.
Right. Of course. But even post-surgeries. Is he the same? Is he better? Is he worse What's your real honest take on Fernando Tatis Jr.? Get to that coming up. Eno Saris can give us some thoughts on disappointments and surprises as well when he joins us at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned. More Ben and Woods coming up after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ultimately, I do believe Fernando Tatis Jr. is the same player that he was before. The numbers haven't been quite as good since his injuries and suspension when he came back. Last year was, in my mind, obviously a bounce back, adjustment season, the timing, everything, the prep that, you know, different for Fernando. This year will be more telling. The numbers aren't perfect yet this year, but he's also had a lot of bad luck. His expected batting average is over 300. His actual batting average is more like 230. He has hit a ton of rockets that have found gloves. The one thing, and I see people pointing it out, and I don't believe it's really true, but it does, there's that anecdotal quality. The warning track flyouts have seemed to have jumped up in the last year plus since he came back. I don't think that's even how steroids work. If you're really going to attribute some of Fernando Tatis's success to
Clostebol,
the pre-suspension, whatever he was using, it doesn't simply turn you from a guy who hits it 415 feet to a guy who hits it 382 feet. It really is not. That's not how they work. It's about recovery. It's about returning. He's not a weaker player. He still hits the ball with the same exit velocities now. This year especially, you've seen the same exit velocities that he had before. You can only hit the ball hard. Now, at some point, you got to get the right launch angles. You got to put it in the right part of the park. The conditions have to be right. It's early season at Petco Park. You're going to have some balls that die at the warning track. I don't think that has anything to do with the kind of player Fernando Tatis Jr. is. I think he's back. I really do.
I think he's back too. And you know, does he chase a little bit too much? Sure.
He did before as well.
More, yeah.
Even maybe.
Yeah. He's one of those guys where I know it's probably naive. I don't really worry a tremendous amount about him. I don't. I like, because he can help you in so many other ways. The one thing I've noticed about Fernando, and this happens with everybody when they get a little bit older and they play a few more games, there have been four or five occasions this year where he'll hit like a squibber, and I'm like, oh, he's on. No, they got him. Oh my God, they got my step. Yeah, everybody's going to lose a step eventually, right? But it hasn't hurt him in the outfield. I know he's booted a couple this year. Some weird errors that he's had this year. He's also made some brilliant plays as well. You got to take the good with the bad.
The play against Trey Turner.
Ungodly, dude.
In the ninth inning the other day.
Like, moronically athletic and insane. His arm, he's got a hose and a good arm. And he's a spectacular.
It's Fernando Tatis Jr.
Thank you. He's a spectacular player. I just don't worry about him, man. I don't. I just want him to be the very best version of himself, and that's hitting balls really, really hard, and that's what he's doing right now. So I don't, you know, you wanted to have an honest conversation. That's my honest feeling. Like, do I want him to do more? Yeah. Yeah, I want him to produce more than he's producing right now, but the process is right. I mean, the process is absolutely right, in my opinion. I mean, again, he chases some bad pitches sometimes. He gets thrown at a ton. They're always moving his feet. They're still scared of him, too, you know, so they're not going to take it lightly. I want him to produce more, and I think he will. I do.
He's also 25 years
25
old.
25 years old, man.
And because
he feels like a 10-year vet.
Because we've seen him for so long, I think we sometimes forget that he's still the age that a lot of rookies are when they come up right now. He's far from a finished product, and you know, you'd expect that the best version of Fernando Tatis Jr. will be the one we see in probably 2 to 6 years from now, is when he's really going to be in his prime. He's not even there yet.
He's really murdering the baseball, though. I mean, really, if you look at his sliders, he's murdering the baseball. It's all you can ask. It's all you can ask from your player. Get up there, hit the ball hard. It's going to find holes. They're going to start to fall. The ball's going to start to carry. You're going to get your bombs. Do I think he's a 40 home run guy? Not necessarily. I think he's a 30 home run guy. And I think he can get to 30 this year. He's got 6 right now. Probably should have about 9, maybe 10.
6 through 34. It's got to be close to 30 pace.
Yeah. So I don't worry about him. I don't. I know where he's going to be every night. He's going to be in the two hole. He's going to be in right field. He's going to be playing. He's going to be playing good defense. I think his pitchers really respect him. I think they feel if somebody shoots one out to right field, he's going to get a beat on it. And if it does drop, he can throw a guy out going first to third. He can throw a guy out going second to home. I love the kid. I'll always love the kid. And I just don't worry about him. I don't. He's just not a guy that I concern myself with overly. Yeah, man, I want him to be in the three-hole hitting jacks, right? Of course, because I like home runs, and I think he's capable of 40 home run power. But, man, the surgeries, the way that he played through some of the pain that he's played through early in his career could have a major effect on it. I mean, Cody Bellinger was a 40 home run guy. He got the same surgery. He's hurt again. You know, I just don't worry. I really don't.
Will Fernando Tatis Jr. win an MVP award in his career?
Yes. I think the answer is yes.
You do think so?
I don't think that's
rose. If I gave you like 4-1 odds that he would win one, you definitely put some money on that?
I don't think that's rose-colored glasses either. Because there's also one thing we know about him is he does have the ability, as he's proven by winning a platinum glove last year, he's a good adjuster. He can adjust. They moved him off shortstop. That's not easy. And they moved him to right field. And he tried to find a way. You're talking about a kid that's played shortstop since he was probably 6.
Yeah, I mean, not winning one's not an indictment. I'm just curious where your thinking is.
My thinking is that he works incredibly hard on his game. He does. They all do. And he spends his offseason playing ball. Why? Because he loves baseball. He's a baseball rat. He's not the typical guy that you look at. He is flashy, and he is a showman. But he's also a grinder, and he's also a baseball rat. He plays in the Dominican League because he loves baseball, right?
He and Jackson Merrill, I think, are cut from a similar cloth.
There is no doubt about it. Different countries, same type of player.
Different backgrounds, but 100%. Same kind of style, same kind of love of baseball, not really caring about that much else. Just wants to go out and play baseball as much as possible.
That's exactly right. So I think he's an elite adjuster. I do think he can win an MVP. This would be a good year to do it. Well, Mookie's really running away with it right now. But
part of winning an MVP is who you're competing against.
Yeah.
And looks like Otani's going to be in your league for quite some time going forward.
That's true.
He's going to be a real threat most years to win it. Yeah, right now Mookie's still playing unbelievable, one of the best Aprils anybody's ever had in the history of baseball. He's a clear favorite right now.
I will say, I'm sure Fernando, when pressed, not even pressed, just asked, would you rather have the ring or the MVP? He'd say the ring. And I think I would rather have that for him than the MVP.
Me too.
But look, if you're sitting out there right now and you're listening, and you're rolling your eyes. If you don't think he's got the talent to be an MVP, I think you're nuts. Because I think he absolutely does. He absolutely has the talent to be an MVP.
We've seen a lot of pitchers continuing to do the throw up and in, go away. And yesterday, it kind of struck me as he did swing and miss on a couple of those outside sliders. I don't think, you know, at first I thought, oh, they're trying to move his feet, get him to back off those outside sliders. I think they actually get him to be more aggressive sometimes on those outside pitches. He knows where they're going. They go up and in. All right, the next one's a slider low and away. He's so aggressively reaching over for those now that sometimes he expands just a little bit and swings at a pitcher's pitch because he's so confident. All right, here comes the low and outside slider because they just went inside on me. Still never a great pitch to hit. Even if you know it's coming, you're never going to do the most damage on a slider at the knees that's just off the outside corner. And so I think sometimes he gets aggressive. I love that you mentioned it, the last at-bat, where he just took his walk and loaded the bases for Jake Cronenworth. They tried to get him to be too aggressive, to press and do something, make something happen in a tie game. They thought, we can get Fernando Tatis Jr. to get himself out because he wants so badly to do something for his team. And he didn't. He took a page from Juan Soto's book, and he just let, all right, you're going to put me on. We're just going to move the line and go to the next guy. And thank goodness Jake has been coming through so often that can now be a problematic strategy for the opposition to walk players. And the Padres are beating you that way now.
Yeah, I mean, you ask a pitcher, like, you're not going to let Fernando Tatis Jr. beat. You're not going to throw a meatball with runners on second, third there. To let Fernando Tatis Jr. beat you. I'll take my chances with Jake Cronenworth. Crony's got to make him pay, and that's exactly what he did. But it was a really big, it was a big boy at bat by Fernando yesterday. That's a big boy at bat in that situation.
All right, we'll come back. Eno Saris will join us. A weekly smart baseball segment is coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. I always smile. I look at the clock. It's Thursday, a little after 8:30. That can mean only one thing. Got Eno Saris standing by for our weekly smart baseball segment. We will get to Eno right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark, by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
So there was a moment for the Padres this week that was just tailor-made for Eno Saris, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
As he joins us right now from The Athletic for his weekly segment. Eno, I had never seen this before, but Mike Schilt actually had to make a decision, like an NFL head coach on a made field goal, but the defense commits an offsides penalty. And you have to decide whether you take the points off the board to get the first down and go for the touchdown, or just take the run that was already in. Mike Schilt went for bases loaded, one out, and Manny Machado at the plate, but no runs in, versus one run in, but two outs, and just a runner at second base. The math seems to favor Mike Schilt, and certainly the results did as well. Good morning to you, Eno.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Yeah, that was a fascinating one. After I did tweet about it and, you know, found some math supporting Schilt, I did also read some math that went against it. So,
really?
So to explain, like, there's a thing called run expectancy. So if you have a guy on second with one out, you expect to score a certain amount of runs. If you have a guy, if you have the bases loaded with two outs or one out or whatever, like, you expect there's a different level of, like, how many runs score in those situations. And in the two situations that he had a choice between, he had a choice between leaving himself with a chance at a third of a run, but already having banked a run. So that's 1.3 runs if you add it together.
Yep.
Bases loaded with one out is worth 1.5 runs, usually. So you say, okay, I take the 1.5 runs over the 1.3. However, the 1.3, you already banked one run.
Yes.
It's not a theoretical run. it's an actual run.
That one is that run that you scored.
Is the run that they would have scored, yes. So when you switch over to something called win expectancy, and it's the same thing as sort of run expectancy, except you just ask, in these situations, how often did the team win, right? He actually lowered the team's win expectation.
Ooh.
And that's because you actually get a run, you know, like you put a run on the board. It's not a theoretical run. And so he lowered the win expectancy. However, the last part, and I heard Jesse Agler talking about this on the radio cast, I'm sure you guys have talked about this, is the soft component, the non-mathematical component, or the fact that these numbers do not account for the fact that Manny Machado is the guy
yeah.
you're giving the chance to. And then Jesse was talking on the radio cast about how that also broadcasts confidence in the team
yes.
to put the 1.5 theoretical runs on the board, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, given that it was Manny coming up, you feel like worst case scenario, sacrifice fly, and you get that one run back. But there's all the other better case scenarios, and, you know, he executed on one of those. So I think it was a fascinating decision. I also think, you know, one thing that may not be captured is, you know, confidence, like in this part, you know, is not as much fun, but like, what's your confidence in your middle of your bullpen? And do you think you need more than one run? Or do you think one run's going to do it?
It's so weird because
he kind of went for more runs.
Well, yeah, it's so weird though, because this team to that point that day had a hard time scoring runs. So, I mean, he threw all of that out the window, and I was listening to them talk mm-hmm. about it on MLB Network, and I think it was Carlos Pena that said, what it does is it's a nice message in the clubhouse. And Schiltz has made no bones about the fact that he's going to believe, if they lose five straight, he's still going to believe in his players. That's just what he does. Mm-hmm. It could be lip service. He could be MFing them behind their backs. Who knows? Right?
But it's hard to say, I believe in my players and then not
run.
Give them a chance to go out and do what he gave Manny a chance to do.
And he said things like that go,
right.
You know, speak volumes about it. And that's where now listen,
well,
in no way do I think Mike Schilt knew those numbers off the top of his head, or that they had a spreadsheet for him. I feel like that was 1,000%. Now, I will say, because I was out yesterday, I didn't get a chance to talk about it, so I'm frothing at the mouth. I will say that is about as from your gut that I've ever seen. And he did not hesitate. He's like, put him back, Manny, you're up. It was brilliant. I mean, it really was. And there's an infallible way to know that it was the right decision. It worked. Infallible. An infallible way. It worked. And it worked really well, and we won that game. It was awesome.
That's not the right way to do it.
Yes, it is! It works!
Eno's entire career model is based on the opposite of that statement, Woods.
So good. So good.
But, you know, another thing that's fun about it is just, like, you think about this in opposition to, like, Gabe Kapler. Like, you're talking about, like, I'm sure, you know, Gabe Kapler was mostly, you know, said nice things about his players, you know, in press conferences. But then what does he do with his players is kind of muck around with them. You know,
yeah.
Like, have these, like, really intense strategies. That might have made the players feel like he doesn't trust them. Like if you're Sean Manaea, you know, last year on the Giants, you feel like your manager doesn't trust you at all.
Correct.
Because you sometimes go in for an inning, sometimes you go for three, sometimes it's a spot start, sometimes you're an opener. Like you don't know what your manager thinks of you at all. You know, and so Schilt looks like he's a little bit more on the opposite end of that, where he's like, I'm gonna depend on you. I'm gonna put you in the position to succeed, hopefully, but also like I'm gonna it's up to you.
Talking to Eno Saris from The Athletic, our Smart Baseball segment, and one thing that's important in baseball analytics, Eno, is sample size. You know, over a very short period of time, an average player can look like an MVP, and an MVP can look like a terrible baseball player. Usually, the more numbers you get, the more accurate and representative it is. So, you wrote this week about some of the early returns on some players that seem to be trending better than before. And one, you brought up was Jake Cronenworth. He made you look smart yesterday with his grand slam to help the Padres win. Another one I want to ask you about, though, is the early returns on Jurickson Profar, because we're all stunned by this. He's now over 100 at-bats. He's hitting .342 very consistently. Now, those numbers, the behind-the-numbers aren't quite that good, as BABIP and things say there should be some regression. But when you look at Jake and Jurickson, you know, how real is what they're doing so far this season?
Well, you know, I try to look at numbers that are more meaningful in small samples. And so when I look at his line, there are some things that are really good, which is he's barreling the ball at about a rate that would be the second best.
This is Jake first?
No,
this is Jurickson. Okay.
So he's barreling the ball a little bit better than usual. He's barreling the ball about the same way as he did in Oakland when he hit 20 homers. So, you know, this could be a season where he hits 18, 19, 20 homers, and that would be one of his best seasons. The other thing that I really like is that the walk and strikeout numbers are probably the best combo of his career. It's the best walk rate of his career. And it's not necessarily the best strikeout rate of career, but it's one of his better ones, and his swing strike rate is good. So those are numbers that are meaningful in small samples. So even if, you know, the batting average on balls in play says that he's lucky, I don't think anybody really thinks he's going to hit .342 for the year. I think he will hit on the upper end of his batting averages, so you could expect maybe like a .260 going forward. You can expect like a .330, .340 on base percentage. Those are both better than his career numbers. I think you could probably even expect like a 400 slugging or better. That's better than his career numbers. So I think we're headed to one of his better years. And for what it's worth, I didn't expect it. You know, after a poor year last year that saw him sort of bounce around, I thought he was on the downward slope of his career. This is a really nice season for him.
It has been, and Crony has been great. I mean, he really has. He's changed. He admitted in the offseason, you know, he had a lot of work to do. He put in the work. Funny, Paulie and I were actually at a cage the other day with a guy that has hit with Cronenworth before and had him come into his cages and was immediately like, you see this? He's down. He's ready. His hands are in a better position. Tell us about what you've learned looking at this year as opposed to last.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the best barrel rate of his career, and it's almost triple what it was last year. So I'm not saying he's going to hit 30 homers instead of 10, but he's definitely going to hit 20, 25 homers this year. I think it's going to be his best year of his career. I mean, at 30, that's a little bit late, but, you know, you get guys that are late bloomers. And one thing that, like, he always brought was the contact rate, and power can sometimes come a little bit later. And I think that's just because if you listen to the way Jackson Merrill speaks or like other people that make great contact, you know, sometimes you just feel like, oh, well, I can touch any ball, right? So I can swing at any ball.
And, yes.
You know, sometimes you make less than ideal contact.
That's
or like something that might get you a base hit, but not a double, you know?
Dude, that's so funny. It's exactly what I was talking to him about. And he said the guys that are like have good hands and good contact rate, if they're out in front just a little bit, you're so tempted because you know you can get bat to ball that you take a bad swing, you make bad contact. He's in such a better hitting position this year, and you're seeing it. He's not fouling those. He's ready early. Like, he's not fouling those heaters that he was missing last year straight back. And he fouled off so many hittable pitches last year. He's not missing them this year. It's just been a delight to watch.
Yeah, no, it's a coming together of things. And, you know, it's really hard to tell who's going to turn into like a C.J. Abrams and who's going to just kind of do what Stephen Kwan has been doing, like just continue to make soft contact. For what it's worth, I think Jackson Merrill has it in a two to add power as he goes. Yeah. I don't know how many he's going to hit this year, but I think a peak Jackson Merrill season might look like a Jake Cronenworth, but like in center field, you know.
The opposite end of the spectrum, Eno, for the Padres is obviously Xander Bogaerts, a player who has always had good barrel rates and has hit lots of extra bases and is doing none of that this season. I hope those numbers aren't telling of what we can expect from Xander in the future, but what have you kind of seen in terms of Xander's lack of production?
Yeah, it's weird because he worked on bat speed in the off season, but his he hasn't hit the 111s and 112s in terms of exit velocity that he has in the past. So far, he hasn't hit a ball that hard. He hasn't hit a ball over 110 so far. So his barrel rate's down a little bit, but and the hard hit rate is really down. I mean, he's normally around 40%. Right now, he's at 24%. So, you know, one thing that does happen, and I've noticed this with pitchers, is let's say you're a pitcher and you add a pitch or you get a velo bump. Sometimes it's hard to then command it. You know, you have to maybe sometimes, like, one thing I was looking at was sometimes in the second year of adding a new pitch is when you really take off. And I think that's like feel, you know. So if he's changed some things, maybe there's just him trying to find that feel again. The reason I think he can do it is he's whiffing at about the same rate as normal. So that the kind of bat to ball, the what we've been talking about, the hit tool, that's there. I don't know if the power will be there this year, but he's going to get it going and have another sort of 320 stretch with the batting average. He's going to get to, like, you know, 12, 15 homers, I'm sure, and he's going to be really important for this team. I think it's maybe just sort of getting to know himself again.
Woods also had a question from earlier, and you seem like the ideal person to ask because of your sandwich expertise. Have you ever eaten at the Earl of Sandwich?
At Disneyland.
No,
he's not. No experience there either. All right, well.
Downtown Disney. I always see it, but I'm always full, or it's too early when I get there. It just stares right in the face. The tram drops you off. You're about to walk in, and Earl of Sandwich.
It's a good name. It's undoubtedly a good name. I always smile. I look at the clock. It's Thursday, a little after 8:30. That can mean only one thing. Got Eno Saris standing by for our weekly Smart Baseball segment. We will get to Eno right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the Super Polished, just to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
So there was a moment for the Padres this week that was just tailor-made for Eno Saris, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
As he joins us right now from The Athletic for his weekly segment. Eno, I had never seen this before, but Mike Schilt actually had to make a decision, like an NFL head coach on a made field goal, but the defense commits an offsides penalty. And you have to decide whether you take the points off the board to get the first down and go for the touchdown, or just take the run that was already in. Mike Schilt went for bases loaded, one out, and Manny Machado at the plate, but no runs in, versus one run in, but two outs, and just a runner at second base. The math seems to favor Mike Schilt, and certainly the results did as well. Good morning to you, Eno.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Yeah, that was a fascinating one. And you know, after I did tweet about it and, you know, found some math supporting Schilt, I did also read some math that went against it. So,
really?
Yeah, so to explain, like, there's a thing called run expectancy. So if you have a guy on second with one out, you expect to score a certain amount of runs. If you have a guy, if you have the bases loaded with two outs or one out or whatever, like, you expect there's a different level of, like, how many runs score in those situations. And in the two situations that he had a choice between, he had a choice between leaving himself with a chance at a third of a run, but already having banked a run. So that's 1.3 runs if you add it together.
Yep.
Bases loaded with one out is worth 1.5 runs, usually. So you say, okay, I take the 1.5 runs over the 1.3. However, the 1.3, you already banked one run.
Yes.
It's not a theoretical run. It's an actual run.
That one is that run that you scored.
Is the run that they would have scored, yes. So when you switch over to something called win expectancy, and it's the same thing as sort of run expectancy, except you just ask, in these situations, how often did the team win, right? He actually lowered the team's win expectation.
Ooh.
And that's because you actually get a run. You know, like, you put a run on the board. It's not a theoretical run. And so he lowered the win expectancy. However, the last part, and I heard Jesse Agler talking about this on the radio cast, I'm sure you guys have talked about this, is the soft component, the non-mathematical component, or the fact that these numbers do not account for the fact that Manny Machado is the guy yeah. you're giving the chance to. And then Jesse was talking on the radio cast about how that also broadcasts confidence in the team
yes.
to put the 1.5 theoretical runs on the board. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, given that it was Manny coming up, you feel like worst case scenario, sacrifice fly, and you get that one run back. But there's all the other better case scenarios, and, you know, he executed on one of those. So I think it was a fascinating decision. I also think, you know, one thing that may not be captured is, you know, confidence, like in this part, you know, is not as much fun, but like, what's your confidence in your middle of your bullpen? And do you think you need more than one run? Or do you think one run's going to do it?
It's so weird because
he kind of went for more runs.
Well, yeah, it's so weird though, because this team to that point, that day had a hard time scoring runs. So, I mean, he threw all of that out the window, and I was listening to them talk mm-hmm. about it on MLB Network, and I think it was Carlos Pena that said, what it does is it's a nice message in the clubhouse. And Schiltz has made no bones about the fact that he's going to believe, if they lose five straight, he's still going to believe in his players. That's just what he does. Mm-hmm. It could be lip service. He could be MFing them behind their backs. Who knows? Right?
But it's hard to say, I believe in my players and then not run. Give them a chance to go out and do what he gave Manny a chance to do.
And he said things like that go, you know, speak volumes about it. And that's where the, now listen, in no way do I think Mike Schilt knew those numbers off the top of his head or that they had a spreadsheet for him. I feel like that was 1,000%. Now, I will say, because I was out yesterday, I didn't get a chance to talk about it, so I'm frothing at the mouth. I will say that is about as from your gut that I've ever seen. And he did not hesitate. He's like, put him back, Manny, you're up. It was brilliant. I mean, it really was. And there's an infallible way to know that it was a right decision. It worked. Infallible. It's an infallible way. It worked. And it worked really well, and we won that game. It was awesome.
That's not the right way to do it.
Yes, it is! It works!
Eno's entire career model is based on the opposite of that statement, Woods.
So good. So good.
But, you know, another thing that's fun about it is just, like, you think about this in opposition to, like, Gabe Kapler. Like, you're talking about, like, I'm sure, you know, Gabe Kapler was mostly, you know, said nice things about his players, you know, in press conferences. But then what does he do with his players is kind of muck around with them. You know,
yeah.
Like, have these, like, really intense strategies. That might have made the players feel like he doesn't trust them. Like if you're Sean Manaea, you know, last year on the Giants, you feel like your manager doesn't trust you at all.
Correct.
Because you sometimes go in for an inning, sometimes you go for three, sometimes it's a spot start, sometimes you're an opener. Like you don't know what your manager thinks of you at all. You know, and so Schilt looks like he's a little bit more on the opposite end of that, where he's like, I'm gonna depend on you. I'm gonna put you in the position to succeed, hopefully, but also like I'm gonna it's up to you.
Talking to Eno Saris from The Athletic, our Smart Baseball segment, and one thing that's important in baseball analytics, Eno, is sample size. You know, over a very short period of time, an average player can look like an MVP, and an MVP can look like a terrible baseball player. Usually, the more numbers you get, the more accurate and representative it is. So, you wrote this week about some of the early returns on some players that seem to be trending better than before. And one you brought up was Jake Cronenworth. He made you look smart yesterday with his grand slam to help the Padres win. Another one I want to ask you about, though, is the early returns on Jurickson Profar, because we're all stunned by this. He's now over 100 at-bats. He's hitting .342 very consistently. Now, those numbers, the behind-the-numbers numbers aren't quite that good, as BABIP and things say there should be some regression. But when you look at Jake and Jurickson, you know, how real is what they're doing so far this season?
Well, you know, I try to look at numbers that are more meaningful in small samples. And so when I look at his line, there are some things that are really good, which is He's barreling the ball at about a rate that would be the second best.
This is Jake first?
No.
This is Jurickson. Okay.
So he's barreling the ball a little bit better than usual. He's barreling the ball about the same way as he did in Oakland when he hit 20 homers. So, you know, this could be a season where he hits 18, 19, 20 homers, and that would be one of his best seasons. The other thing that I really like is that the walk and strikeout numbers are probably the best combo of his career. It's the best walk rate of his career, and it's not necessarily the best strikeout rate of his career, but it's one of his better ones, and his swing strike rate is good. So those are numbers that are meaningful in small samples. So even if, you know, the batting average on balls in play says that he's lucky, I don't think anybody really thinks he's going to hit .342 for the year. I think he will hit on the upper end of his batting averages, so you could expect maybe like a .260 going forward. You can expect like a .330, .340 on base percentage. Those are both better than his career numbers. I think you could probably even expect like a .400 slugging or better. That's better than his career numbers. So I think we're headed to one of his better years, and for what it's worth, I didn't expect it. You know, after a poor year last year that saw him sort of bounce around, I thought he was on the downward slope of his career. This is a really nice season for him.
It has been, and Crony has been great. I mean, he really has. He's changed. He admitted in the offseason, you know, he had a lot of work to do. He put in the work. Funny, Paulie and I were actually at a cage the other day with a guy that has hit with Cronenworth before and had him come into his cages and was immediately like, you see this? He's down. He's ready. His hands are in a better position. Tell us about what you've learned looking at this year as opposed to last.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the best barrel rate of his career, and it's almost triple what it was last year. So I'm not saying he's going to hit 30 homers instead of 10, but he's definitely going to hit 20, 25 homers this year. I think it's going to be his best year of his career. I mean, at 30, that's a little bit late, but, you know, you get guys that are late bloomers. And one thing that, like, he always brought was the contact rate, and power can sometimes come a little bit later. And I think that's just because if you listen to the way Jackson Merrill speaks or like other people that make great contact, you know, sometimes you just feel like, oh, well, I can touch any ball, right? So I can swing at any ball.
And, yes.
You know, sometimes you make less than ideal contact.
That's
or like something that might get you a base hit, but not a double, you know?
Dude, that's so funny. It's exactly what I was talking to him about. And he said the guys that are like have good hands and good contact rate, if they're out in front just a little bit, you're so tempted because you know you can get bat to ball that you take a bad swing, you make bad contact. He's in such a better hitting position this year, and you're seeing it. He's not fouling those. He's ready early. Like, he's not fouling those heaters that he was missing last year straight back. And he fouled off so many hittable pitches last year. He's not missing them this year. It's just been a delight to watch.
Yeah, no, it's a coming together of things. And, you know, it's really hard to tell who's going to turn into like a C.J. Abrams and who's going to just kind of do what Stephen Kwan has been doing, like just continue to make soft contact. For what it's worth, I think Jackson Merrill has it in him too to add power as he goes. Yeah. I don't know how many he's going to hit this year, but I think a peak Jackson Merrill season might look like a Jake Cronenworth, but like in center field, you know.
The opposite end of the spectrum, Eno, for the Padres is obviously Xander Bogaerts, a player who has always had good barrel rates and has hit lots of extra bases and is doing none of that this season. I hope those numbers aren't telling of what we can expect from Xander in the future, but what have you kind of seen in terms of Xander's lack of production?
Yeah, it's weird because he worked on bat speed in the offseason, but he hasn't hit the 111s and 112s in terms of exit velocity that he has in the past. So far, he hasn't hit a ball that hard. He hasn't hit a ball over 110 so far. So his barrel rate's down a little bit, but and the hard hit rate is really down. I mean, he's normally around 40%. Right now, he's at 24%. So, you know, one thing that does happen, and I've noticed this with pitchers, is let's say you're a pitcher and you add a pitch or you get a velo bumped. Sometimes it's hard to then command it. You know, you have to maybe sometimes, like one thing I was looking at was sometimes in the second year of adding a new pitch is when you really take off. And I think that's like feel, you know? So if he's changed some things, maybe there's just him trying to find that feel again. The reason I think he can do it is he's whiffing at about the same rate as normal. So that the kind of bat to ball, the what we've been talking about, the hit tool, that's there. I don't know if the power will be there this year, but he's going to get it going and have another sort of 320 stretch with the batting average. He's going to get to, like, you know, 12, 15 homers, I'm sure, and he's going to be really important for this team. I think it's maybe just sort of getting to know himself again.
Woods also had a question from earlier, and you seem like the ideal person to ask because of your sandwich expertise. Have you ever eaten at the Earl of Sandwich?
At Disneyland.
No.
No experience there either. All right, well.
Downtown Disney. I always see it, but I'm always full. Or it's too early when I get there. It just stares right in the face. The tram drops you off. You're about to walk in and Earl of Sandwich.
It's a good name. It's undoubtedly a good name.
Yeah. You like sandwiches a lot. All right. Well,
what's the best chain sandwich place?
Yeah. What is your
sandwich
favorite chain?
Expert, you know?
I guess I like Ike's.
You know, Ike's, yeah.
Good. Ike's is good. Solid. Ike's is good. They name their sandwiches after famous sports people sometimes. So
yeah, I know you like
that's
it.
Always entertaining.
Yeah. We have like a Matt Cain locally. Yeah.
No Eno Saris yet, though.
No, that one. We did do a really fun one in New York that was, we ended up calling it the Bulgogi Apparatus, which is a fish reference. I just came back from the fish at the Sphere in Vegas.
Yeah. Yep, incredible.
And it was Bulgogi, it was basically a Bulgogi
Korean barbecue beef
sandwich.
Yep.
Yeah, Korean barbecue beef with like shredded lettuce, shredded pickled ginger, it was really, really good. It was like on a soft loaf.
I know what I'm getting for lunch today. A delicious sandwich.
Yeah. You're getting round table pizza.
No, that's true.
We've got a round table this morning, so that's what you're getting. Eno, as always,
Thank you, buddy. Crushed it.
Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks.
Eno Saris, our Smart Baseball segment brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, and a little encouragement, actually, about Xander Bogaerts.
Sure.
I was expecting the worst.
Me too.
Xander's toast. He's done.
That's it.
Never expect anything again. No. Eno says he actually should be fine. Maybe power numbers will be down a little bit, but he liked what he's working on. The contact rate's still pretty good. Don't worry as much about Xander as you've been worrying about Xander.
It, you're right. I mean, it's the feeble contact that's getting, but if he's not striking out any more than he has before, I guess your only thing to do is have faith and belief that he will come back around to making better contact.
But Eno has no investment in making sure it happens, which is why his perspective is always appreciated.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll come back. Rindle Report, final hour of our show, and then we'll head over to the sound space for this week's roundtable discussion with everybody. So lots of Padres talk on the way. Don't go away. More Ben and Woods coming up on 97.3 The Fan.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.